Michelle?
So this paper follows on from the agenda consultation feedback statement where we said we would assess the equity method, and what we're looking for is your input onto the project proposal that we've outlined in agenda paper 13. So we've identified in the paper that historically the equity method has been used in a number of circumstances to resolve different financial reporting issues, and currently within IFRS as 28 doesn't, it explains when and how to use the method, but it doesn't explain what exactly the method is. So, and in the agenda consultation, the queries were on the methodology of the method rather than on the financial reporting issue. So what we want to do in this project is to spend some time defining the problem and identifying what the financial reporting issue is that the equity method seeks to resolve, before looking at information needs of users. And so once we've got a better understanding of the circumstances where the equity method is applied and what we think the problems are, looking then at the information needs of users and looking, and then going on to look at the equity method and possible different alternatives. And also we would then propose as well to look at some of the current application issues. I think it's identified in appendix to this paper that there are a number of application issues that have been referred.
Pick up, Michelle, please.
That a number of application issues. Issues that have been referred to the interpretations committee. So we would look at those issues and how they're being addressed. So that's an overview of what's in the paper, and what we were looking for at this point was input from the board on whether you had any comments on what we were proposing.
We go.
Very simple comment or question. Last page, 21st, because it's summary, very easy to catch. And point five about methodology. The objectives, I think, I agree with, but the first one seems quite too simple. I think it means improve the equity method and including simplification.
Yeah,
you look, if you compare the other three, it seems, you know, just simplification is not the overall objective, right?
Yeah, that's right. We would look at the current method and if we understood the problem better, whether we could simplify the method or whether we needed to do something else. So I think other people have made comments that we should look at some other alternatives within there as well.
Yeah, I think some people have jumped and said, look, simplification is the easiest thing to do. And we could propose that, but we just have to step back a little bit and think a little about what the risks are of doing that, and to make sure we understand the problem better.
Patricia?
I agree with the staff's conclusion late in the paper that the equity method may have been required for associates because of concerns about related party transactions. And so I think you may need to separate your work stream or your thought process differently when you think about plain vanilla associates and when you think about joint ventures. I also agree with the staff analysis in paragraph 44 that distributions received bear little relationship to the investee's performance. But another more colloquial way to express that is where there are significant intercorporate investments, investors become increasingly concerned about earnings management. So I, for one, don't think that simplifying the equity method is going to address the underlying reason why it was initially applied to investors that had significant influence over another entity. And I think there is a spectrum. I think years ago, just a few years ago, before we issued IFRS 10, for example, where the line about where you had control and didn't have control seemed to be a bright line of more than 50% ownership. And investors were very concerned about that gray area, and that's why I think joint ventures are going to be, I think you have to look at sort of separately from plain vanilla associates. But now that we've got what we think is a good definition of control, so that it captures what is appropriately control, there may be less concern about related party transactions, intercorporate transactions with associates. But I think where there is control, I think that underlying concern that, number one, it doesn't represent the investor's performance accurately, is combined with the fact that joint control can certainly result in earnings management if or the appearance of it, because it won't necessarily be reflecting performance unless you use the equity method or something akin to that.
Were you there in 1976, Pat?
Hmm?
Were you there in 1976 when I was brought in?
In the U.S.?
Yeah, it said paragraph 10 said it came in to IAS in 1976.
No, I wasn't there in 76, but I was there. I was there when it was amended.
In 1989.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember very well the agenda consultation, but my vague memory is that I wasn't very much convinced about the arguments over this problem. And having read the paper here and thought a little bit about it, I don't understand what problem we are trying to address. So it's very good to hear that you are going searching for the problem. And I think you should really limit this to finding a problem to solve. Because I don't think we have much of a problem to solve here. I think this works very well. And I've never heard anyone that I've met in the user community has thought that this is something we need to address. I think it works very well. But it's good to do some research if we think that there are people who are not happy with it. I think this is rather academic thing we are heading for.
Thank you. On paragraph 30, there are two paragraphs, A and B, especially on the B. I just wonder whether we need to think about investors' needs on this separate financial statements. Maybe non-investors' needs might be more relevant on this issue. So I'm suggesting whether you have a plan to investigate non-investors' information needs on this equity method for their separate financial statements.
I think that's right. When I was looking at this, I think in separate financial statements, it has to be user needs rather than just investor needs. So I think we will have to think about that.
Yeah, so that's the point. Another point is, if we think about the non-investors' information needs, then this is a little looks. We needed to maybe examine their conceptual framework, because our objective of financial reporting is our primary users is basically investors, capital providers. So there will be another issue to be raised. Maybe you need to address that linkage between this project and the conceptual framework. That's the another part. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Building on a few things some others have said, including Pat McConnell, I agree with the approach that you're proposing, firstly, I should say that. I am a bit concerned that a lot of the feedback that we're getting is very preparer-focused about preparers wanting simpler methodologies, which is fine to then investigate, but I think we have to be careful then to look at the flip side carefully. And I guess what causes me to pause a little bit is that I feel I can understand what a cost measurement is, I can understand what a fair value measurement is, I can understand sort of the idea of a one-line consolidation. But if we start to have a simplification of the consolidation aspect so that you're not doing the same eliminations, etc., I'm not sure what information you get out of that simplification. So I think that it'll be very important to spend time with users of financial statements if we start going down those paths to make sure that what we come up with is a measurement method that makes sense. And I think we'll have to do that very carefully, because I think in the same way that preparers find it very confusing how to do all of these eliminations, it's quite a difficult conversation to have with users of financial statements. So I think we'll need to be quite careful to have some sort of practical examples of the types of transactions that might be occurring between the entities and what they would look like if you kept it more like a one-line consolidation versus some of the simplifications that we might propose, so that they can really understand the differences that come through in the measurement and whether or not they think that's good information and whether it's serving purposes. So even if you're going to do that as a separate step, I'm just saying when we get to that step, let's make sure that we understand what the measurement actually then captures. It's not that it's just simple, but is it still a good measurement, a good valid measurement method?
I think that's right, because we had an initial discussion with CMAC, and I think it was clear then that when we went to them next time, we had to take examples to them that enabled them to discuss the information needs rather than just ask them open questions. I think we've got to be very specific about changes we propose.
And it's only anecdotal, but my sense is that it's the number itself that you calculate is not what's really important to them. It's actually what's going behind it, which is why in relation to JVs, for example, and an equity method, they're interested in a sense, that's a catchy phrase, the value drivers behind it. They want to know what's influencing value. So the number itself, you know, because we raised the issue about fair value, for example. I said, look, it's not the fair value per se. In fact, we'd rather actually understand how it's contributing to the overall group in terms of financial performance. So the one number is not really going to be the magic thing. So the question is, because I agree with you, it's the one number. What does it actually mean? And what other information, to Pat's point about those relationships, is going to be important to understanding it.
Amaru?
Thanks, Hans. Michelle, thank you very much for the paper. I think it was very nice reading, and particularly with the history of this project. I guess I'm aligned with Jan. I've learned with Jan since I joined the board that in many projects we must identify the problem. And my sense is that we actually don't have a problem here. If I go to the feedback on the agenda consultation, if I consider the ones who asked for extend the scope to separate financial statements, the ones were possibly prepared to ask for simplifying requirements, and the ones who identified this is not a priority product, I total 24 out of 37 letters. If I add 5 that do not think the full to fair value is the answer, I add 29 in 37 responses. So I basically have 8 people or 8 comment letters that request conceptual merits exploration. So okay, there are lots of things in accounting literature that needs to be explored in terms of conceptual merits, and you mentioned, we mentioned the conceptual framework project, for instance, intangibles. And I do think we need to very clearly, and I do agree with you, identify first if we have problems and what problems are. The comments made by Patricia might indicate problems in general, might indicate challenge for users. But I think we should focus on users here and try to identify real problems. And then if we do have real problems, establish the way forward to sort them out and achieve a more efficient way to conclude this project.
Can I just
Yes, Pat.
Clarify something? I don't think there is necessarily a problem for users today. I think there might be a problem for users if, for instance, we simplify the equity method and eliminate the requirement to eliminate gains and losses on upstream and downstream transactions. Then I think users are going to have a problem. So I'd be very cautious about trying to simplify the equity method when it's applied.
And I do very much agree with your petition.
Isn't it? I was puzzled by the description of the objective of the project, which is, so we have an accounting method, and the first objective of the project would be, why do we have it? It was introduced by ourselves or our predecessors, and isn't that, I mean, do we need a research project to understand why we have an accounting method that we ourselves introduced?
Can I answer that
To an outsider, this might sound a little comical.
Okay, can I answer that? But I want to address two problems that Jan raises and Amara is saying there's not a problem in here. I think we do have a problem from a preparer perspective because we're receiving so many questions going to IFRIC. They are almost tired of answering questions. I'm surprised you're not tired of answering the ones that are feeding up through there. You get the filtered ones. But most of the issues that come to us seem to be because there's a tension between the requirements we have in IFRS 10, the control notion, and when you go from being a subsidiary to an associate, you measure the full amount of the gain because you have full fair value. When the board made that decision, they knew it was in conflict with IAS 28, and they were going to address IAS 28 in the longer term. So there is a conflict in there. The issues that we have about whether or not when you impair an equity instrument, do you look through that and actually see that the first bit was goodwill, so then you have a recovery. You can recover up to that amount, for example. All of those issues are the problems that people are facing. So I think we have preparers tell us they have difficulties. The regulators are telling us they're getting inconsistent application because of those difficulties. So that's the problem. What we're trying to do is to step back and say, well, there are a couple of ways to think about solving the problem, but we don't want to solve that problem for preparers and create a massive problem for users. So by stepping back, understanding what the motivation was for the equity method in the first place, understanding what information it's trying to convey, we can address and identify whether we can get a solution to a known preparer problem that I think is documented nicely in here. So I think it's not so much understanding why that's not the objective. I think that's a necessary step in understanding whether it's possible to deal with the problems that we've got at the moment. Because an alternative for us would be to go back and amend IFRS 10 and make everything a one-line consolidation, for example. And that might be a way of getting, but there could be the one-line consolidation, that might be a way of getting rid of the problem, because that's where a lot of that tension sits at the moment.
Mary?
Alan, I think actually you've teed up a couple of myself quite well, because I was looking at this and saying the history helps in terms of understanding that equity method is an answer that's been deployed for a range of questions, and you know we've knocked out a couple of the issues of the drivers for it. But I think maybe a way to approach this is first almost two columns of every question you ask, which is consolidated financial statements and separate financial statements, because they could be quite different outcomes. And I think the first question is, do we have a need today, having struck out a couple of the uses, do we have a need today for an intermediate category between a group entity and an investment? Because that, in effect, equity method is a mezzanine method where we said these are investments that aren't part of the group, but they aren't normal investments either. So maybe that's kind of the threshold question. Do we still have a need? And then I'd answer consolidated and separate financial statements differently. Because I think you've also shown that one cluster of the issues that are coming up arise from the idea that the requirement to apply, that many of the requirements of IFRS 10 also apply, and that goes also to IFRS 3 and BizCom. And that seems to be around the notion of we need equity method to do a variant for an almost group entity. This is kind of what Pat McConnell was saying. But if we step back and ask the basic question of, do we need an intermediate method? And if so, why and when? We might have an answer to the question of, do we need that requirement for applying most, if not all, of the consolidation adjustments, you know, in a methodology? Because I you know, again, like Sue, I should have started by saying, I think absolutely the right idea to step back and say, what's the root cause of all these questions that are coming up, rather than saying we've got a lot of requests for simplification, how can we address them and package them? It's very good that you're standing back. And I think it's just almost more a method of how do you sort this. Because when I look at maybe paragraph 38 to 40, one question that comes to mind is, would we say the IFRS 10/IFRS 3 adjustments, you know, the as if they were part of the group adjustments, as if they were a group entity, would we say only to the extent of control, which then translates to in separate financial statements, if you're applying the equity method for an investment in a sub, for an investment in a jointly controlled entity, that's when you do that. But it's kind of mapping the requirements to the drivers. So right way to ask the questions, I think an explicit question that's raised in here indirectly as people told us they don't want a fair value answer. Well, that's people discussing the outcomes. I think the question is there still a need for an intermediate method given all the work that we've done in IFRS 10? And then after we've answered that question, think about where do we think it's, is there a need for another method? If yes, where is it and what's the driver? And do we want, look at Hans when I said this, go back to the notion in the Netherlands from, the early days of you want it to get the net assets, equal, which to me implies a separate financial statement application. So just some ideas, but I think stepping back is the right general approach.
Doug?
Yes, I think Mary said it very well. In order to answer to Mary's concern, I think page 18 of your paper provides a good spectrum of the investment in equity. You made this table with the viewpoint of equity in investment. And actually, we have lots of requirements about equity in investment. But if you look at just equity in investment in equity, then we could see how difficult it is to identify what it means. So many people said there is no problem with the line between simple investment and associate, because IAS 28 type accounting survived nearly 40 years. So therefore, the bright line of 20% is incorporated in the business practice. So therefore, whenever we have a negotiation of acquisition, then the 20%, the number, come into the practice. So therefore, it looks like there is no problem. But hypothetically, there is a serious problem. So for example, if you have only 8% of the share, but others has only less than 1%, then perhaps you may have significant influence on that investee. So the things the other way around is possible as well. So therefore, the line between a simple investment and associate is quite difficult. But the problem is, once you call it the simple investment, then it will fall into the IFRS 9. So therefore, in the IFRS 9, we have the problem of the strategic investment. So then that is the serious problem in the IFRS 9. So perhaps we could scope out investment in equity from the IFRS 9 and put in a consistent accounting standard just for equity in investment. That could be one of the solutions. And the other thing is about the line between the associates and the subsidiary. And we have some kind of bright line, but in terms of control, it is clearer than the influence. However, as long as we say equity accounting could be a surrogate of consolidation, that could provide lots of expectation gap. Because theoretically speaking, it is impossible to achieve the same outcome of consolidation only by the equity accounting. But as long as we say it's kind of a one-line consolidation, it will create lots of illusion. You know, it's really equivalent to the consolidated financial statement. That causes lots of problem. And that illusion would confuse investors. So therefore, in order to avoid such illusion, we need to address only to the investment in equity and make a consistent standard. That is the problem we should address.
Pat? I'm going to focus on what I originally put my card up to and not all the comments since. Michelle, I think that in addition to the methodology that you're proposing here, you have to examine what problems that the equity method creates. And the list of items in the appendix that Alan alluded to, I think, are among those that we have to deal with. And that's one of the reasons why we have to examine this project, because as we've learned around the board table, there aren't clear answers to those questions. So I think we need to resolve them and have one kind of cogent, clear set of principles. In the work that Fred Nito and myself are doing with CFA Institute in the education area on IFRS 11, what we've learned is something that Jan alluded to that doesn't exist, and in fact we've learned does exist, which is that initially analysts are not really enamored with the move to the equity method of accounting for joint ventures. In some companies, they've expressed the fact that they feel they're getting less information. There's a loss of information going to a one-line approach on the balance sheet, one line in the income statement. Now, the panacea to that was IFRS 12. And key to that is how faithful does a company actually provide all that disclosure information in IFRS 12. What we are seeing is in the segment information that companies, through the eyes of management, are taking the information that they would otherwise have reported on a proportion consolidation method, they're actually doing that in the segment data. And you have a more or less a reconciliation from the income statement balance sheet into the segment data. So that's essentially saying the equity method is not really addressing our needs. So I think in this project, we need to take a look at that issue. And the question I have for you is, because this research is going to span, I presume, over the period of time that we'll do the post-implementation review for IFRS 11, I think we should probably allow the two activities feed each other and or inform each other about what we're learning about the equity method. I'm not saying necessarily undo IFRS 11, but if we learn through enough feedback that, frankly, eliminating proportion consolidation wasn't the smartest thing, then maybe we should have a look at that. So the other aspect of this that I think is going to be very important is understanding what the effects of each decision is on the current balance sheet, income statement, and cash flow statement. I've already suggested to you, I think it would be useful, I think, for the staff to build a model that would illustrate the effects of any proposed changes that you're thinking about on the current application of the equity method. And that way we can see kind of the before and after effects, because that's exactly what these analysts are saying in the disclosures. They're saying that what we had before was actually more useful than what we're getting now. And had they received that up front and looked at that before we actually finalized IFRS 11, I don't think they would have raised their hands and said, yeah, we want this.
Philippe? Well, overall, I agree with the objective of the project. But like Jan, I feel that what we need to address is mostly the application issues and not the fundamentals of why we have equity method. It's been there for many years. No one has ever managed to define whether it is consolidation or a proxy for valuation. It's been under discussion in the European directives ever since we have had an accounting directive quite a long time ago. And I think it's not a big issue. Like Pat, I think that, Patricia, I think that changing the requirement to eliminate intra-group transactions, or intra-group, quote-unquote, because it's not group, but transactions with those associates would be extremely dangerous for the investors. Because what makes equity method applicable is that you have significant influence, as opposed to just influence that you have over a normal investment where you can exercise voting rights and you can influence. If I have 10% of Suez GDF, I can influence. I cannot significantly influence. So this significant influence, which is not controlled, but sometimes is very near to control, creates a situation where transactions can exist between the investor and the associate, which are not quite the same as transactions with totally independent parties. So having this elimination of transactions, I think, is a safeguard against potential abuse. Yes, there are some application issues. We know there are difficulties. I think we can fix them. But I would be extremely reluctant to replace equity method by something like, say, fair value accounting. Why? Because in many cases, investments in associates are investments in private companies, not listed companies, where the determination of fair value will be difficult, will be subjective, and will not be superior, I think, to what you get with equity method. And I'm not sure exactly what are the objectives that the equity method do pursue. Is it to value the investment or to depict the performance of the investment? Probably both a little bit. Probably not very much to value, otherwise fair value would be a better approach. But I think it's more a proxy to try and capture in the reporting of the investor the performance of the investee in a simple manner. How much this investee made as income and my share of that income. It may not be distributable as dividends totally, but ultimately, at the end of the day, all that amount will be distributed in a way or another one to the investor. So it does capture in a way the performance better than the dividends, which are a cash basis form of accounting. Here we are in a form of accrual accounting in a way. So, Matt.
Gary? Thank you. Philippe just stole my notes because my card was up before his. Try to add a few internal points. I agree with Philippe and Jan and Mauro. I don't think there's a big problem out there, but I think there's a series of little problems. I do agree with the way, Michelle, you want to approach the work in it. And my instincts tell me, when we're all said and done, is equity method's going to survive whatever this project may go, maybe redraw the lines a bit on 20 versus 50%. But I think we'll be hard-pressed to come up with a demonstrably better way than it's done today in concept. When I look at I think it's more of issues of application. When I look at application, I sort of break them into two pieces. There's, call it day-to-day operating transactions between the group, and what do you do about trading profits or losses between them. And then I think there's capital transactions when you start going in. I think it's a different set of issues when you start changing your proportionate interest in the equity investee when they're selling shares and you're not, or you're selling some of their shares. It's all sort of like, sometimes it's gain or loss, sometimes it's goodwill. Sometimes you look at what happened with the valuation of the other counterparty's interest in it, and do you bring that gain into your account? So I think day-to-day transactions are different than capital transactions and for purposes of this research. And I would suggest we sort of approach those, if not differently, just recognize they're, I think, very different. I think a lot of the difficulties in application are more in the capital type transactions they are perhaps in the operating transactions. And I agree with what Philippe and Alan said. I think the ultimate need of users, investors, know what's going on underneath, you know, inside the, you know, non-consolidated operations.
The only thing I would add is paragraph 48, Michelle, you're proposing not to think about too much about the definition of an associate. I've never really understood why significant influence is the driver behind the use of equity accounting. And I understand Pat's point about the anti-abuse and the intercompany transactions and eliminating the gains, and that's fine. But why significant influence? And I'd like us to investigate whether really that is the right dividing line between fair value and equity accounting, or whether it could be moved one way or the other. I think that's an important issue in this whole project.
We go.
The idea is put out by Tuck worry me very much, you know. I personally feel the summary in Appendix B should be basically, you know, maintained. Otherwise, you know, we will have a very broad and broad project, you know, as Taka said, you know, investigate into equity accounting at all. And I'm not sure where we will go and when or how can we finish the project. And if we want to fine-tuning something like Steve mentioned, I will agree with. But shaking the whole structure among 9, 10, 11, and 28, and say the reopen everything and reinvestigate, I don't think, Alan, in your mind, you will do so. You agree?
Can't ask me. It's a big question to ask, because I agree. If you said, you know, to Steve's point, you know, we've done a lot of work on IFRS 9 about how you measure an equity instrument based on cash realization, for example. Then we have the exception we go through the fair value through OCI. You know, there's a risk that we would end up fundamentally questioning that. We could take that and apply it across the whole range, or I think we have a bit of a tension between significant influence and the thinking behind IFRS 9. So it would open some very big questions. So it's not saying we shouldn't have a look at issues. The nice thing about a research project is it gives us a chance to step back a little bit, but it's a pretty big issue.
Doug? To respond, Wego, I share the same concern. If we reopen IFRS 9 and IFRS 11 and IFRS 10, then it's going to be a nightmare. So I do understand that. I do understand that. But because it is the research project, and as Stephen mentioned, we have to know what's the investment equity is all about. And there are a variety of equity in investment. If you want to earn money, just buy equity in investment and then sell it next day. So that's purely financial instruments. So probably that falls into the pure IFRS 9. But there are a variety of equity investment, like a strategic investment. You wouldn't sell it, and you would treat it as if it's a PPE. But in that case, even the proportion of share is maybe less than 20%. And why 20% makes any sense? I can't understand why 20% is the magic number. Therefore, those kind of things should be discussed once in the research project, because it is a research project. Then we could decide whether we can make a, you know, simple solution or a quick win solution or a fundamental rethink. So that is the approach we should take in the research project.
I think there are some conflicting views, I think, around the table, but I think the majority of the board was basically telling you don't fix what ain't broke. Yeah. Is that a correct summary of what the
majority? Just a reaction to tax, 20% is not a bright line. You can have, under our standards, significant influence with 10%, or you can not have it with 25%. Yeah. It's a trigger that makes you think about, do I have significant influence?
Of course.
The second element, which I think would be interesting to investigate in the work, is there a relationship between the accounting method and the holding horizon of the investment? If I buy a 20% stake in a company with a view to sell it within the same year, I will not apply equity accounting. I will do it fair value, held for trading, whatever, IFRS 9. I may not even use fair value OCI. I may use fair value P&L. I'm not saying that our standards require a holding horizon to use fair value OCI or to use equity accounting. But I think behind the notion of equity accounting or fair value OCI,
is probably a notion not very explicit of holding in this investment for a certain period of time. It's not expressly said in the standard, but I think we should maybe investigate this notion. What is the best depiction of the best accounting method according to the horizon of holdings investment? Which, by the way, is very popular these days in certain circles.
I strongly disagree. No surprise, though, right? I mean, the reality is many investors will hold a position in a company for decades, but they will buy and sell that position up and down as they see the price of the stock changing. So the price of a stock has nothing really to do in many cases with what you think about the value of the company.
I agree.
You might see it being overvalued or undervalued. Yeah. And this happens all the time in Tok's country, and actually in Martin's country too, with certain key affiliates.
That is true. That is true if you invested a private company, that will not happen. And many investors are private companies where you cannot trade.
To show how dangerous, easily this can spread into all of our standards. Is there any standard that hasn't been mentioned yet? So I would suggest that you keep the scope limited, and again,
if this becomes a platform for the long-term investor,
gist of this conversation,
you know, mindset, that's
the
bad.
The general gist of this conversation was to not fix what ain't broke.
I think there was strong agreement with the approach.
Yes. Okay.
Next.
Read the minutes.
Yeah.